All right. So, welcome everyone. Nice to see so many people, or at least a list of names of so many people here. I hope we'll have time for discussion as well further on, and we'll be seeing your faces as well in the future meetings. But this is the introduction lecture for our digital research methods course arranged by the Faculty of Humanities and Social Sciences. So if that's what you were coming to hear, you are in the right place. And maybe first start with introductions of us, Marko.
Yeah, you're very welcome from my part too. And I will be giving lectures in this course about social network analysis and topic modeling is what I'm doing. And my background is from in a field of history research. So that's a kind of in a nutshell what I have been doing.
Thank you. And I'm Tanja Välisalo. My background is, well, actually my master's degree was also in history, but I did my doctoral degree in contemporary culture studies. I've been working with different kinds of digital tools for research for a long time, and even more so in the last couple of years, due to a project I'm working on. You will hear about that as well in the coming meetings. And on this course, me and Marko will jointly lead you in these first couple of lectures, and then later on I will talk about digital annotation of data, which is a method, which is a procedure connected to several different research methods. But to start off, so we are the two responsible teachers on this course, and we have divided some of the work so that Marko is responsible for the credits for the doctoral students, and I'm responsible for the credits for the master's students. So you can, if you have any questions at any point in time, you can ask either of us. But if you want to direct the questions based on what's your like state of your studies, then you can pick the responsible person for that. Maybe we should, Marko, also mention that you are the coordinator for method studies for doctoral students at the moment. So perhaps any other questions related to method studies in doctoral phase in the humanities should be directed to you as well.
Yes, that's true. And so I'm kind of in charge of our faculty method studies for doctoral students at the moment. So if you have any questions in your in mind that about how can I do doc method studies in my dissertation work, then you can contact me. So and there's a there was a small course already in this fall, but there's also method studies courses coming in the spring. So if you are interested in doing some kind of method studies later on spring, that will be possible.
But now, you know a bit about who we are, where we come from. We would love to hear more about you. So maybe there are so many of you that we might not be able to do introductions on camera, but maybe you could just like write out in the chat what's your disciplinary background. It might give an overview to us, but also to others. About who is here, where do you come from? And also a good opportunity to find the chat feature. So don't hesitate, just briefly, what's your scientific discipline, academic background, degree program, whatever background information you want to give, so we have more of an understanding and idea of what perspectives you might have. Okay, so social science, politics, development studies, cultural policy. English, psychology and music psychology and music education, art education. Oh, I love how varied this is. Musicology, creative writing, contemporary culture, cultural environment studies, communication. Social policy, and interesting to hear about your topics as well. Sociology, history, music therapy. And I think, based on the sound cue, somebody just joined us, so welcome. We are currently in the process of writing out in the chat what are your participants' academic disciplinary backgrounds, so you can join doing that. Social and economic history, music therapy. I think we actually have people from all the departments in our faculty.
Yeah, that's a very nice variation.
Great. I think that's super great for us, and I hope for you as well, and I'm sure, because that also gives the opportunity to have really varied approaches and varied perspectives on these methods we are going to deal with on this course as well. Because even though me and Marco and other experts on this course will be giving lectures on certain methods, certain tools, I'm certain that there are always different use cases, different contexts in where to use them that we have not encountered or are not familiar with. So your perspectives really, really come as welcome here. All right. Thank you so much. Let's get on with the basics of this course. So, what's going to happen in the future coming weeks? So, we have some goals, like I'm sure you've already seen from Sisu when you registered on this course. So, first of all, we want you to kind of get a rough understanding of what digital humanities is, what it could be, digital humanities and digital social sciences. So this is something that some of you may be very familiar with already, and some of you may be hearing the term for the first time. So we hope that after this you know what all digital humanities can be. More practical goals are we want you to be able to obtain, get, or create a digital corpus, so a digital data set of your own during this course. Another goal is we hope you will get to know digital tools in human sciences. That's what we're thriving for, at least, and learn to use some of them. Now, because we are dealing with several different methods on this course, that means we cannot expect any of you to become an expert in one of them just based on this course, but you have some knowledge of how to use them, how they could be used. You have tried out yourself and you are able to proceed based on that. And not just tools, but also methods related to them. So we hope you will get an idea of how to utilize these digital methods and also be able to evaluate a bit what kind of results they produce, what are the limitations, what are the perhaps novelties as well, maybe come up with new ideas for using them and so forth. So these kinds of goals we have for the course at the moment, but I'm sure you might have some personal goals, something that's important to you that you are looking for. You might have a particular question, a particular area you're interested in based on your own topic, and on your place in your degrees. Are you in the beginning, in the end? Are you, if you're a master's student, are you already doing your master's thesis? If you're a doctoral student, are you just starting to gather data, or are you already launching in the into the analysis phase? It's also quite all right if you just want to get an overview of what is out there, even though it's not directly connected to what you are doing right now with your research. But of course, we hope that you will get some tools for your particular research case.
In this, I could also add that remember that you don't have to already know something about digital humanities or know how the tools work or something like that. We are kind of getting started from really basic, so that this is the place where you can actually learn from them and learn to use them. And so you don't have to have a previous knowledge of any kind of this. So, and also you don't have to kind of learn everything, but it kind of gives you idea that I ne may need maybe a few of these now, but you get the knowledge that in future you might kind of need them, or you think that, oh, maybe I'm the next project what I'm doing, that could be a interesting way to go or something like that.
Yes, very, very good points. Thank you. And what are those different tools and methods we are approaching on this course? Here's our program. So the topics we are covering on the future lectures. So today we have the introduction, and next week, Marco, and with my help, we'll lead you to source materials, research data in digital research. Then we will get on with the more concrete, more particular methods. So tools for different analysis methods. So annotations, network analysis, topic modeling, corpus research. And in the end, we will look or glimpse into the future and see what kind of advancements are being made right now in the area of digital research methods. We'll look at the kind of tools and work that is done even in our university at the moment to develop methodological tools for digital research. So about the structure, we always have a lecture and a demonstration, as you can see here. So, what this means is that during the lecture, we might already, like, we usually first cover something general about, well, let's say network analysis that Marco will be talking about. What is network analysis? What kind of process, what kind of a process it can be, what you can do with it, and then we'll look at some specific tools. And already during the lecture, we will go to the actual tools and start trying them out. then you are free to, after the lecture, work on them yourself using either your own data or some kind of model data that we example data that we will give to you. And then the next day you have the demonstration where we will together look at the progress, look at the programs. Do you want to say something, Marco, about the demonstration part?
Yes, Tanya already said that already in the lecture part we start kind of doing it, using it, so that it would be easier for you to do something from your own. And then in the demo part, you can kind of show to everybody what you have done, and this is not kind of show off what you have done, how wonderful it is, because it is learning process and it's difficult sometimes. But then again, with doing this and showing the others what you've done, we usually kind of come across certain kind of problems that I was trying to do this, but I couldn't figure out how to do it. So this is kind of how we can learn, like we all can learn something like that. Okay, so you got kind of this kind of problem, so if we do this and this, then we kind of solve it. So this is this demo parts are more also kind of a time when we kind of run into the problems and solving them together so that we can all learn. So I kind of want you to understand that don't take any stress about it.
Yes, very good point. And especially thinking that these two events are usually on consecutive days, so you would have very little time to achieve something that's very polished and finished. So I would think that even more the questions you have are valuable and something that we can all learn from, I believe. And just realized now that in our this slide, we're actually me lacking mentions of demonstration from the first two meetings. So maybe I should actually add them there before uploading these to Moodle. In the Moodle, we also have the more precise timetable. But this week, the demonstration part, it's not yet connected to actually using a program, but we will be giving help in installing software and getting to use different programs. So a few of you have actually asked about tomorrow, because in the CISU schedule, you and in your calendars, if you have exported it to a calendar, you can see that there's a place on campus, on Jyväskylä Seminaarimäki campus for tomorrow's meeting, but that will be a hybrid meeting. So we'll at least parts of it we will have online in Zoom, but you also have the possibility of joining on campus. And I highly recommend that if you are working and studying in Jyväskylä, you join us, because it's probably a lot easier to get a handle of all of these tools, have them installed on your computer if you join us on site. We will also, I believe, have the advisory personnel from the IT center to help us if there are difficult cases, because some of the programs we use can be, well, maybe just one, it can be kind of challenging to install. But Marco will be able to help with that as well.
Yes, like tomorrow, if you are able to come, that's probably a little bit easy for you. But also, if you're not able to come, then join for the hybrid thing, and we're trying to give you information and kind of help you out in that way too. And like Tanya said, most of the programs are pretty easy to install for yourself. But there's the one program in topic modeling called Mallet. It's a little bit tricky because it's kind of works a little bit different than the others. And tomorrow there will be Aapo from a digital service to help you out for the for some or some real, there's a few kind of things that might be a little bit difficult. But anyway,
Yes.
the point is that we get all the pro everybody gets the, all the programs working before we kind of start teaching them so that we can kind of concentrate for the teaching. And but
Yes.
if you are not able to come tomorrow or you are missing the hybrid possibilities, don't hesitate to contact us so that I can't do this and but I miss those. So we will kind of try to arrange the some other way that you will kind of be able to install everything and it works fine. So
Yeah, I think this is actually a good time as well to show the course Moodle. I'm sure some of you have already been there. Maybe some of you used the Zoom link from there, but just in case, it should show for you here. So the course Moodle environment, there you have content on these different pages. There's the welcome page where you have news channel, you have a discussion forum you can use for asking questions, asking for help, giving out tips to others, and then you have the course schedule as well as the Zoom address there. So it's the same Zoom address every week. But in connection to the tools we mentioned, there is its own page for tools. So tools on the on this course, and there are sorry for the layout. It's can't be really easily helped in Moodle, but there are all the different software we use and information about if you are Jyväskylä University staff or grant researcher and you are able to use university personal university computer, which programs you can install via Software Center. Then there's information on if you are using your personal computer, which programs can be downloaded freely. So almost all of them are free to download except for Atlas T, but you do not need to buy it for this course, only if you need it otherwise as well. You also have a freeware option for Atlas that works in a browser. You don't need to install it. Then there's also information on where these programs are available on the Jyväskylä campus if you are working here. And underneath this table, you will find all the download links, instructions for installation guides, and so forth. So if you can't make it tomorrow, these are also available to you. But might be easier and quicker to do this together tomorrow. And further on the down the road, all the materials we have, all the possible like extra readings we can provide, additional info, they will all be on their own pages. So one page for each lecture slash topic.
I could
So,
add that
yeah.
in this topic modeling part, I have been using Mallet program, and we will do it again. But I will do for extra. We kind of check it the kind of tool called Voyant Tools, and it works on browser, so that you don't have to install anything. Just in case that you are kind of interesting to do topic modeling, but the Mallet kind of maybe it could be a little bit challenging. So that's kind of an easy way to do something, so that so you can see that would this be helpful for me, and if it is, and then you can kind of jump forward and learn the Mallet. So.
So there are options
Yeah.
there as well. All right. So a couple of more things about the course practicalities, the course completion. To complete, you need to, well, participate in course meetings, take a handle on the demonstration assignments, and in the end, write an essay. So the essay is the part where you really get to think about how these are connected to your own field of research, your own discipline, perhaps your own research topic. You can think about what's your research, what are your research materials or data sets, or if you are, for example, a master student and are not currently doing research, or if you are a doctoral student and perhaps already in the final stages of your work, you might want to think about your own research field more broadly. And there are more instructions on this essay in Moodle, but that is the kind of the end assignment on this course. And this essay should contain reflection on using at least two methods or tools presented in this course, and also make use of research publications on your own field related to these topics. And
I
the,
could just
yeah.
say that there's a small tip for you doing the essay, because you have to kind of think about all what we are teaching in the essay. It could be good for kind of writing along with the course, so that you don't have to kind of wait to the end of the course and then try to figure it out and remember what we do. So.
Yes, definitely. And here more, once more about what we actually talked about already. Lectures, first introducing the method, the related tool, then independent work that continues, and in the demonstration you can present your own work with the tool. These demonstration assignments, as Marco already mentioned, they're not graded or evaluated as such. The point is that you actually get to try out different things. That's the most important thing, that you actually test yourself hands on what it's like.
So
But
epic fails doesn't affect at all.
it good addition, yes. But hey, I think that's all for the practicalities. Do you have any questions on that? At this moment, now is a great time to ask. You can also ask further on. You can write in the chat. We can answer also in the end of the. Go ahead.
This is Godfrey. I wanted to know, because if I didn't get it well, I was thinking that within the 5 credits, you are not you can choose to do, let's say, 3 credits or the 5 credits. Can you clarify that for me? Because I was thinking that not all the methods that will be taught will be needed. For example, I have already done something at last. So if I'm doing it again, it's almost like, so can you clarify that for me? Thank you very much.
So this is a 5-credit course, so there's no fluctuation between how many credits to do. So the final assignment is the same for everyone, but we are not keeping count on how many lectures or demonstrations you attend, because we do understand that people also have other obligations, especially if you're working. Working at the same time, it can be difficult to get into each and every meeting. So we will not have a strict guideline there on how many meetings to attend, but you need to be able to try out these tools during the course. So in order to do the essay in the end. But 5 credits. I hope that answers.
Like in your case, because you already know Atlas, there's probably you might opt not to take part of that lecture, but you can write it in your essay that how come Atlas is useful in your research.
Okay, thank you very much.
And also, I think that those kinds of experiences you probably already, it sounds like you already have with Atlas, could be useful for others if you want to join the demonstration. But same goes for other topics as well. Are there more questions about the practicalities, or shall we move on to our topic? If not, let's go on and start with some concepts. So we've been throwing around these digital humanities, digital social sciences concepts here, and these could be familiar to you before. Maybe you haven't really heard about them. But digital humanities and humanities computing are at least the concepts, terms that have been widely used for a long time, and they have been used to mean a variety of things. So basically, one could say that they have been used to mean any intersection of humanities disciplines and information technology. So, for example, especially in the launch during the launch of online teaching in a more widespread way, there was a lot of talk about digital humanities in that context. But of course, in this course, we are more interested in the research context, research use for that term. Later on, this term also spread to social sciences, and there was a digital social sciences is the term that's most commonly used nowadays. But there are, of course, like depending on the discipline, there are other overlapping concepts as well. There's social computing. There could be computational linguistics. If you're on that field, you might find computational linguistics as a term that's more useful when doing searches for literature, for example. So several concepts, but the overall umbrella, we call digital humanities and digital social sciences, and the commonly used abbreviation is this SSHD for that. And here's just one example that kind of shows a bit of the timeline. I'm not sure if you're familiar with this Google Books Ngram. At least you also, if you're familiar with it, you probably know that it's also somewhat limited in the kind of data it uses. But based on Google Books data, you can use it to search for terms and see how their use the kind of trends in their use. And here, for example, we looked at digital humanities and what happens there. And you can see between 2008 and 2010, it's starting to kind of gain momentum, and then a strong upwards curve towards 2012, 2013, that area, and continuing further on. So this kind of shows the age of this phenomenon, of this particular concept, especially. So we're talking about a time period of approximately 15 years that this digital humanities discussion has been most strongly going on. But Marco, do you want to go more into detail?
Yeah, here you can kind of, we can get a little bit, when I say that it kind of discussion starts from the, maybe 2010s or something like that. Then what's it's kind of a little bit more historical background for this, like there's a nice way that Kimmo Elo has said that, that here's Kimmo's quote, that a new scientific revolution, that what digital humanities is meaning for him, it's like a new scientific revolution that will not only recognize scientific research, but more broadly our entire understanding of knowledge. And that is quite bold statement in my mind. And, but is it so? Or only future will show us. But in what is kind of origin is that the internet. The internet kind of really changed the, how we can kind of access of information. And it was before that you had to kind of rely on different kind of professionals who were chewing the information for you. But with internet, it was you were able to by yourself to search information. And but the one problem for that it usually the most of the information in what you can use from the internet, it's already in digital form. So that kind of reveals the first kind of problem that how about the historical data that goes very long period of time, and what how to access from to that, and how to use it, or how we can pass that heritage from the future generations. So the in that sense, to tackle that problem, the first wave of digitalization started already maybe in 1990s or something like that. And we started to talk about digitalization of handwritten or some other way, typewriter produced like materials that we had in the archive. So basically we started to digitalize the materials but were already storage in archives. But in that first wave, we soon discovered a small problem. When the technology was sort of like taking a leaps, we realized that the all the digitalization what we did in 90s and so on was kind of made in with the idea that the humans are reading it. So it was kind of digitized in a form that you can only look at it and read it. So it was, we realized that the computers couldn't read it. So then we have to kind of quickly, the humans have to quickly rethink the whole thing that we have to do it this again. And that is kind of the second wave of digitalization when we start digitizing these old archive materials in a form that also machines could learn it and read it. So that is kind of the second wave, and that has been ongoing like in 2000s, and we are still doing it like a. And we are still haven't been able to only done just a small part of all the what materials we have in archives, but we are, that is a goal, and so that is kind of second wave of digitalization, and now the question is like how much this last few years the artificial intelligence could again change the whole thing. That would that be a third wave, or is that something that we have to start already again from the beginning? So this is kind of the challenges that the digital humanities have. Like we have lots of materials, but we kind of have to again and again and again do something about the materials that we can use it in a way that we want to use. We can move on. So the question is, what is digital humanities, and how does it differ from the from analog stuff? And here's Kathleen Fitzpatrick's definition, which is kind of a very simple way to put it. And the different what it is that if you use some kind of computing technologies when you're doing your research or investigate something or have in a field of humanities, then you can call it digital humanities. So it kind of explicitly means the use of computer-aided methods. So how, in sense, digital humanities is kind of limited in the fields of human sciences. That it only can be used in the human sciences, and but still, it's not that different than what we have done before. We still are going to solve same problems that we solved before. We just have a kind of new waves, new methods to do it, answer the same questions. So maybe we get a little bit different results because we can use different methods. So in a nutshell, it is kind of new, but then it's also old.
Sorry, I was muted. So if I were to kind of condense based on that, in practicality, digital humanities term, there's a lot of still a lot of discussion about what it is, and the Fitzpatrick definition that Marco showed is I think very much great working definition. So usually when you discuss digital humanities, it's important to depending on the context to define what you're talking about. Usually it refers to the digitality of either the research object or the research methods. So the digital humanities perspective really emphasizes methodology in general. And as we already previously discussed, there are different fields, different kind of subfields to that. There are those field-specific terms like digital history, corpus linguistics that we mentioned earlier, digital musicology, for example, which might be relevant for some of you here today, and probably many more from your own fields. And when you start looking at your the research in your own fields, you will find more concepts, I'm sure. But you can also kind of divide digital humanities, start looking at it in these kinds of pieces that, okay, there are these sub areas of digital materials. So questions of digitization, of information, of different kinds of sources, source materials, data sets, and production of new digital data sets. Then you have the usability of data sets as a second sub area. So developing the searchability, the usability of that data. So as we know, it's not enough to have the data in a digital format. You also need some kind of interface or access to it for the human user as well. And thirdly, the machine user. But thirdly, there are the digital analysis methods. So this is a rough division into three, but it's something that I hope will help you to kind of conceptualize these topics during the course. But okay, a bit more about the origins.
Yeah, it's like a even we kind of feel this is a very kind of a new way to do research or new way to do think about the what human science. Then it is still kind of a old tradition. The humanists have always have this kind of idea that we have to find some new way to think about this. And that always has been an essence in humanities. How to interpret this, what we have, this source materials that we study in a new way, so that we can kind of learn it maybe from a different angle, or giving that it would give us a new information. So there's always this kind of idea that let's invent something new. But then there's always like the previous generation might think that what is that? Like, is that the word? Way doing it, like according to Plato, Socrates was really, really against to write it down stuff. He argued that it destroys human memory, and but in some way, when we started to write it down, our stuff, our kind of a legacy, it also. The materials start to increase really quickly, and then we have these different versions of the same kind of maybe aspect or same thing. So we have to start to kind of figure it out what's the meaning of why we have these different versions of, and what is relevant and what is not, and is this some fake or not, or what? There's millions of questions. So in that sense, we also need kind of very critical thinking, and also maybe a new way, new ways to kind of study this thing. And digitalization is one answer in and it's a kind of answer in our time for this ancient problem. And of course, like when something new comes along, there's people who opposite, but if you go like a really in a basic level, and you like, for example, if you took a book in your hand, so it usually in the end of the book there's kind of indexes, so maybe names or places or something like that, and you kind of a natural thing that oh, this is very helpful, so I don't have to kind of read all this book by myself and look everything if I'm just looking for some specific information. So that is basically text mining already in there. Somebody has kind of mined the text and made the index. So in the end, text mining is, it's just kind of making indexes, but it more like a large scale. So that's what it basically it is. It's like a few examples, like how this doing indexes in digital humanities is. If you take like a National Library newspaper collections, there's more than 4 million pages. So that would be quite impossible for one reader to start reading it through and doing something. And or just if that researcher is like looking for some specific thing, to find it all the quotes from the 4 million pages, that would be impossible. So that kind of the reason why, when we kind of realized that we can use technology for doing this, so that enables the one research do a little bit different things than the research before. So in that sense, the text mining goes on, and we can use the technology really, really different ways, like name entity recognition, topic modeling, clustering, and like network analysis or vector models design, studying the text in of like masses of text. And that's kind of the core of digital humanities. But Well, this kind of earliest thing that when the computer was used, and it actually goes really far in back in history. It's not just 70s, 80s, or 90s. It actually the first time computers were used, it was 1946 by Italian Roberto Busa, who wanted to study Thomas Aquinas' complete work, and especially for the in a kind of language studies. So, with collaboration with IBM, he made a kind of program that kind of using punch cards, and there was 11 million of these punch cards. And in the end, there's a results of his studies is 56 volumes of printed results. So in some sense, we can say that the origin of using technology and kind of what the origin of digital humanities, it is in language studies in some sense. And that is probably the reason the language studies has been kind of pioneering in this area, that from language studies it started to spread for the other fields of humanities studies. So what human studies usually are, the close reading is kind of the essence of what we have done. In that's kind of basic level of humanities studies, that we have some kind of source materials. It can be whatever, and most of the time it is text. So how can we study text? Naturally, we read it, and we read it more carefully than average reader would read, and that's usually have been our method. So we are close reading, and we are trying to read it so close that we could understand it a little bit more. So that is kind of the basics of humanistic studies. So that is kind of the starting point of if you're going towards of the digital humanities. It's the close reading. Oh no, the close reading. And the when they kind of get bigger, these source materials, so we get kind of so we can get like a more different kind of questions. And for the next step, no, don't go back. The next step from the close reading was the analyst from the 1970s. They wanted to study more broad questions, so and more kind of larger time scales. So these it was called like longue durée, like a how study bigger things in a bigger time scale, so that they could find out different kind of changes or what happens in the, and that was kind of one of the way where the humanities studies were going. And after that came Franco Moretti, who kind of first time used digital methods, and he started call he start he called his method in this distant reading. So it wasn't close reading anymore, it was distant reading. And that is where is kind of the foundation of the digital humanities is, like we are distant reading all the materials. And Franco Moretti even went so far that he said that we don't need to understand the sources anymore, the computers will do it and gives us, but that maybe is a little bit too far. So It is a question above which is better, close reading or remote reading, or close reading and remote reading. So that is kind of consensus we have to trying to find that and most of the researchers are kind of saying that we can't just do remote reading. We also need the close reading. So doing like a digital humanities, it is some kind of a compromise with the or with those kind of two different viewpoints. So that's give us in a step like that. So what are the source materials what digital humanities are using? And there's a kind of two different sections, when you say like a two different kind of entities of source materials. The first one is the source material that is born digital. So it already when born, it is digital. It's like a game, so social media, digital arts and literature. So when you want to study of those, your sources already are di digital, so you can use different kind of tools to access them over them. And then we have this another big chunk of source materials we have to make digital so that we can use it. And that made digital material usually is kind of printed sources and newspapers, magazines, and archive materials in general. And some collections of metadata, what we have insert when we have been digitizing this stuff. So the big question in digital humanities is the digitalization of the research data. And so we have kind of done it already a long time. We have many disciplines in the humanities, social science, and natural science. We have used numerical and statistical data. We have what we have been analyzed with some kind of computer things. So that have been kind of the basic the numerical data what we used long time, but then we had this kind of other questions like the humanities that so we have so many source materials they are only in texts or images. So how can we kind of do research with these texts and images that we could use computers like calculating something? So that why we were kind of stepping this digitalization process so that we could put this text in a form of digital so that there would be a researchers possibilities to start digging these texts and images in a different kind of way.
Yes, there's a strong focus on this course actually on the textual, partially due to the kind of advancements that are made in recent years, but there's more and more interest now in the visual as well. And just to give some examples, Marco talked about the digitization of textual data, why, what are its kind of constraints, the motives, the historical timeline. I'm here mentioning just some very current or let's say this examples from this millennium related to the image data. So one that could be interesting to some of you in your works or future works might be the kind of to remember that later on at least that there are these possibilities of digital imaging and modeling of, for example, historical objects. So, for example, museum collections, objects in museum collections. Some work on that area is being done currently in many, many museums and collections all over the world. But also, the scale can be something a lot larger. Laser scanning entire buildings or built environments, and to think about the possibilities that gives or could give to the approach to this type of data. So actually, when you think about things like buildings, we don't necessarily usually think about them even as data. We might think of them as research objects, and the data could be photographs, our notes, and so forth. But via these digital methods, we can actually create digital, in a sense, digitize, create digital representations of these kinds of environments as well. So something that we previously could not as directly transform into data, we now can. So in certain ways, the change here is even bigger than with the textual data. But I'm sure someone might argue against this, that there is a significant change in text as well when you transform it from the physical into the digital. But these methods also enable the kind of research, the kind of entering into these spaces using virtual reality technology, for example, that might not be possible otherwise, for example, through reconstructions of archaeological sites, just to mention an example.
Yeah, that's really interesting, kind of the idea. But I really like that we can recreate the lost world again.
And that kind of gives completely, like, opens a whole new world methodologically as well. And for methodological development, I think the kind of the strength, but also the challenge in the development in digital humanities and social sciences in recent years and in the technology around them is that you have to really think beyond what you have learned, and you are kind of able to find new, completely new approaches and new methods, but you kind of have to push through these preconceptions of what you can do. This is another example. I'm not sure if we have time to watch it now, but you will have this in the slide. So there's a video link in here. I'm not sure. I believe it was in Finnish. I'll check, but just kind of the visual image of rediscovering Rau Maria, so a ship that was sunk in the ocean in the Finnish coast, and that was kind of discovered, and the archaeological work that was done there. Here's a reconstruction that enables anyone. Anyone from the public, but also any researcher, to kind of enter into this world of this ship wreckage and its environments. So you don't have to be a diver to access what's left in the bottom of the sea. So there are also these kinds of hard to get research objects which can be at least somewhat accessed via a digitization using these methods. But that was a glimpse into some of the visual methods. But if we look at data mining next, Mark will talk about this a bit. I just want to remind you that even though we are talking a lot about textual data, for example, data mining can be used in large quantities also with visual and audiovisual and audio data as well.
Yes, like I mentioned already earlier that even we are we can have a digital data, and we can study it also using traditional research methods. That it doesn't have to always be kind of fancy digital methods to study. You can use data just for the really original way and the kind of the make your analysis from that way. But it also gives you kind of new kind of possibilities, because in the end, the computer is simply superior if you have a really, really large data sets, or you have to map out some research topic, or you can use it also kind of in a pre-study. Like first you use computer to kind of map out the whole mass of data, and then you kind of pick there from the things that you maybe want to look a little bit closer, so then you can use your traditional methods. So the text mining also gives you kind of possibility that you don't have to use individual text or images, so like a few texts or few images, and but you can kind of take much more bigger source material for you to study and use machine learning to kind of analyze your bigger data.
We will actually have some examples of this in towards the end of the course as well.
Yeah, and so it is, and this just collecting this large textual data as a data sets, that's simply way simple sim in simple way it's called data mining. So, and it doesn't have to be new kind of born digital material. You can also use this already older material that is digitized, and it might give you kind of new ideas that even if that material, source material, has already been studied with the you know, kind of original traditional way, you can come back from that material and kind of use different kind of maybe digital tools, and it might reveal some hidden links or trends or features that interest you that was never figured out before, because it you can kind of study it more wider context. But of course, like the science is based on critic, so also digital humans, you have to also think the critic size, like that you can't do science without any critic. So, and digital humanities have been criticized for about positivism, reductions, and especially like bringing quantitative social science research into humanities, because we are using a large scale of research material. So some researchers have been kind of saying that it doesn't give us any deeper information or understanding, and only close reading the material can answer the questions. And there is some points in there, but then again, you have to kind of think bigger picture. And also, it may kind of give you kind of idea that are we doing this just the sake of doing it? It's like, are we using digital methods because we can use it? So are we just doing nice graphs or nice visualizations? And what kind of new that gives to us? And this is a very good question. And when you actually think about it, should I use this digital research method to my source material? You have to always think about that the important question is like that it doesn't mean that you should do it because you can do it. It has to give you something extra. It has to give you something new. So that is the question that you have to think through when you actually start using digital methods. And one of the big fears in digital towards digital humanities is this question of post-humanism. Is it like it already kind of came to surface in 2010s when if you remember where the social humanities studies started to really rise. At the same time, brought up to the surface the question of post-humanism and the fear of kind of post-humanism. And what happens, what comes after human? The question, what comes after human? So, is this kind of the historical moment where we are kind of going into the dark side? It post-humanist sometimes has called like the dark side of the dark side of the digital. So are we kind of creating a situation where artificial intelligence starts to study these things and making own conclusions and some sort of where the humans fit anymore? And that, well, that is not what the digital humanities are, and they have this is the question that they have been arguing against that, and in the end they just digital humans are saying that even we're using machine learning or digital analysis tools, we are not post-humanists, and we are actually digital humanists say that they are defending the human values and humanism itself. It is just to research these materials, research materials, what we have, our all the stuff, just a different way. We are trying to kind of understand our past a little bit better. And also we are trying to preserve our cultural heritage or pass forward our cultural heritage with these new kind of digital methods used. So what are the strengths of digital humanities? That so I think the biggest gain what we have that we can kind of mine these large data sets. And because if you just take one journal, like Economic Review, it already kind of makes new digital sources for us. But there's so many pages that we are producing already, so that in like in 10 years there's like millions and millions and millions pages. Like how can we study these by reading anymore? No, yes, we can do it, but can we do it a little bit better with just mining the whole decade like as a once? Maybe we get a little bit more different results. And this is going back to the question of remote reading versus close reading. So you can use remote reading, but then again you can combine it with a close reading if you get some kind of a certain hits that you find it at, and I think that okay, this is it, what we ha I have to close read. So we are kind of trying to be in the balance of distant reading and text mining and kind of explore this large amount of text and then kind of go into the close reading. So what kind of challenges the digital humanities then have? And one of the questions that pops out quite often is that if I want to be a digital humanist researcher, do I have to be able to code or make my own programs or something like that? Of course, it helps. It might give you kind of different kind of, but it's not necessary. But like in this course, we don't have to know anything beforehand. We can some maybe learn to use some programs, but we don't have to necessarily. We don't have to have a kind of a coding experience, or we don't have to know how to do it. And some research projects have kind of solved that problem that they actually are forming research teams with people with different kind of skills. So you can have one person who can actually code, and then you have a one person who is really good in analyzing stuff, and then maybe there's a one who actually can coordinate everything and put it together. So maybe the challenge is that we have to just go more like a teamwork. I don't know. This might be a challenge for maybe older researchers who are kind of used to do it by themselves in that small chamber of some dark cave, I don't know. But now we can kind of step into the light with a bunch of friends, chit-chatting about science and maybe do it together. So maybe we are stepping forward. I don't know. So then it's a question also about defining digital humanities as a field of studies. Like, what is digital studies? Like, if you study social media, is that a digital studies, or you are just reading digital material that is digital? Where is the line between the what is digital humanities and what is just a basic humanistic studies, but your source material is digital? I don't know. It is quite vague the where the line actually is. So this is kind of a little bit contradicting the feedback definition, where the research method is more crucial than the subject. So, which is so in linguistics, unlike many other fields, digital methods are already like a common practice, and because they have used these kind of different kind of things, so there's a challenges, but there's a lots of things that we can gain. So the future, the now, that in digital humanities we are really big part of is focused on textual research, but there's also becoming more interest about the audiovisual data. But one of the challenges is that when if we are studying like a moving picture, it really takes a lot of computing power, and so it has been a little bit challenging. But I think with these new kind of technologies, we are going more in a more visual studies than before. Then the other challenge is how can we preserve the matter that has been digitized, that it's not gonna go outdated with the technology. I remember that I had some I did some kind of data sets for myself, and storage in the kind of places or physical objects that I cannot use anymore. The technology has changed, and there's no kind of these old machines left anymore that I could use them. So what happens, these kind of data that goes outdated. So it has created a kind of new field that it's called digital archaeology. That there's a specific persons that kind of have a knowledge to use technology that is already forgotten from most of, from us. But this is still mostly people who you do it this like a hobby. So it's not kind of recognized in a in the academic world very largely. The digitalization has already changed, and it continues to change. Like I thought about it, the first wave, it was like the, we digitized materials so that humans can read it. Now we are trying to digitize all the materials that the machine can learn or read it. So that will be always be in a change. So, and we kind of have to try to figure out where it's going and try to be get the best out of it. And also the future is like I said, that it looks like that we are going towards more teamwork than the single research work. And this is already kind of everyday life, already outside of academy, in businesses. It's teams that are working and solving problems, and teams are trying to figure out what's problem. Teams are trying to figure out how to move forward or something like that. I guess in the end, I would say that these digital methods will strengthen, and we are getting kind of results that is kind of new, that we can kind of dig in all these materials that has already been studied many times, but we can still find a new angle or new way to squeeze out information that it was hiding in there. So in some sense, we don't kind of inventing new, we are just kind of finding new stuff from the old stuff.
Thank you. I think this is a great basis for what we are launching into in future weeks. And kind of to conclude, I would like to remind you that even though the methods we're looking at, the tools we're looking at are digital, the computer does not do the research. It's the human who does it. It's you who actually do the research. So you are still in control of your work as much as it is ever possible, because as Marco said, we are always doing things in teams, and more in the future as well. But what are the ways to actually get familiar, to get support? This course, of course, is one of those places, and will hopefully serve to inspire you and give you help and guidance and ideas, and maybe find collaboration with others. But there is also a larger digital community in existence. Here are just a couple of examples: the European Association for Digital Humanities, the Digital Humanities in the Nordic and Baltic countries, but also here in University of Jyväskylä, we are launching cooperation. So JYU, dig network, is launching this fall And you might have seen the emails related to that, marketing emails of the first event that will take place next week. Marco, I think we can also, as a reminder, send to this group in particular the
Yes.
same invite. And the registration deadline is tomorrow. So if you want to participate, be quick. That's going to be an on-site event. So there's not going to be a hybrid participation there. But in the future, the network activities can also take place online or in hybrid format, depending on what the participants want. So the purpose of this network that we're launching now is to share experiences, share expertise, ask questions together, find answers together. So you don't need to be an expert to join. You can be just interested in this topic area. So that's kind of a brief marketing message of that future activity we're going to have at the University of Jyväskylä, but also encourage you to look into these more broader international communities. There are different possibly different areas in your fields where these discussions take place. Also in Finland, you will hear about this project further on, but in Finland, we are currently developing digital methods in the humanities and human sciences more generally via FinClaring and Dara.fi. So Clarin is more focused on the linguistic part and Dara in other humanities, other social sciences. So there's ongoing work in several universities all over Finland in the National Library, National Archives, and there's cooperation. So it's something that's very strongly pushed and supported by the Academy of Finland as well currently. And these, for example, the Dara website or the FinCurrent website are ones that I encourage you to take a look at as well to find out more about what's happening more generally in your fields as well. Then we have here a short list of some digital humanities publications. We could actually add to these a bit. I think I have a few others I was thinking about just recently that are not yet on this list, but we will provide you with these slides so you can get them from there. And finally, some of our sources for today. But I think we are quite exactly on the clock. So thank you everyone for joining us this first le on this first lecture. Me and Marco will still be here if you have questions, comments. We would love to hear about you, but if you are busy going to your next meeting, then I think we can conclude with the official part of this meeting, and I will also stop recording at this.